WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
What is up, Tuscaloosa, and welcome to the Student Section. I'm your host, Aiden McGuirk, joined by Adam Hambright. We're going to talk a little NFL football, a little college football. Glad to see the Alabama Crimson Tide back to winning. Got some interesting stuff happening in the NFL, but we have got ourselves a in-division rival Monday Night Football game as the Washington Commanders will travel to Philadelphia to take on the undefeated Eagles. This does not project to be much of a close game. Obviously, starting quarterback for the Commanders, Carson Wentz, is out with an injury. So the backup quarterback there, Taylor Heinicke, who has started the past couple of games for them, will continue to start for the Commanders. Philadelphia has an 83% chance to win this game, according to the ESPN matchup predictor, and they are sitting here at a minus 11 point favorite to win this game. So we're going to get into the predictions here. Adam, who do you have winning this game?
You know, I have to go with the Eagles in this one. I don't really see this being close. I know the spread's 11. I kind of expect it to be wider than that, especially with Wentz being out. Taylor Heinicke, he is a good player. He's put up a lot of good performances for them. But, you know, the Eagles right now, they are the last undefeated team in the NFL. I don't know how much longer that's going to last, but I don't really see it ending tonight, especially with the way Jalen Hurts has been playing this year, almost an MVP caliber level of play that he's been having. So I have the Eagles winning this big. I can't even really give you how, like, what an actual score prediction, but I think it's going to be at least two touchdowns.
Yes, Jalen Hurts with over 2,000 yards on the season, 12 touchdowns to just two interceptions, with a QBR of just under 63. Alabama fans are very familiar with Jalen Hurts and all the fantastic things that he is doing there. They have one of the better wide receiver tandems with A.J. Brown and Heisman Trophy winner Devontae Smith. Dallas Goedert, their tight end, is coming on strong lately. And their offensive line is one of the best at run blocking in the NFL. They have a phenomenal run attack. Miles Sanders there. Of course, Jalen Hurts, very capable of carrying the rock himself at the quarterback position. Now, the Commanders do have a very good defensive line, partly because they have signed just about every Alabama defensive lineman that's ever come through here. You know, the likes of Daron Payne, Fedarian Mathis, Jonathan Allen. So it'll be interesting to see how the Eagles' run game matches up against the Washington Commanders' defensive line. But I think that they have enough in the passing game that it should not make that much of a difference. I, too, have the Eagles winning, and I'm going to take plus the points there over 11. All right, so some interesting things happened in the NFL there in Indianapolis. As we talked about last week, Frank Reich out as the head coach of the Colts, and they are bringing in former All-Pro Super Bowl winning center Jeff Saturday to become the interim head coach for the Indianapolis Colts. Saturday took the Colts to Las Vegas this past Sunday, and left with the win 25-20 over Josh McDaniels' Raiders. Interestingly, he started Matt Ryan at quarterback. Now, for those of you who have been following, Matt Ryan was benched in favor of their backup quarterback, Sam Ehlinger, out of Texas. I think partly because Matt Ryan wasn't playing great and because there is a massive injury guarantee on Matt Ryan's contract. So if he were to be injured, I think the Colts would end up having to pay him somewhere like $17 million guaranteed. I'm not entirely sure. Don't hold me to that, but I know it's a big number. So they start Matt Ryan here at the Colts, and they walk away with a win. And Jeff Saturday has said in his opening press conference that he is using this final stretch here. He's getting a head coaching job in the NFL. He's never been a head coach at the college or professional level. He has coached high school football. But he wants to use this as maybe a platform to kind of bolster his resume to potentially continue being a head coach in the NFL. So, Adam, do you see Jeff Saturday doing well enough this season as the interim head coach to maintain this position?
Maintaining this position, I don't really know. I don't think so. I know he's, you know, he's a great, you know, Colts, you know, player. You know, he played there for many years back when, you know, Peyton Manning, and even after Peyton Manning left, he was still the core, he was still the center there. You know, he doesn't have a lot of coaching experience, which I can kind of understand. You know, he has the history with the organization, why they would want to bring him in for an interim job. I don't really see the justification for just making him the head coach after, you know, the last half of the season, unless he does amazingly well and he just proves everybody wrong, because there have been people that have criticized him even being the interim coach. I just think to be an NFL head coach, you need more experience than, say, half a season. So I understand a lot of these times it's, you know, who you know, what kind of connections you have, which will help him, but I don't see him being a head coach with the Colts next season. He might do well enough to get like a staff job. I don't know if he would go straight to a head coach, but maybe he could get a position coach or even a coordinator job if they really like him. But, you know, there's a lot of job openings that will be opening up at other teams who might want to take a chance on him, or even at the college level. If there's somebody who thinks he did a good enough job at the Colts, Colts don't offer him that job, he could move down to college. I just don't see him being a head coach past, you know, the last half of this NFL season.
Yeah, it is interesting because I know for, you know, Bill Cowher, who is obviously a former Steelers head coach, he's on CBS, said one, I think this past Sunday on CBS, that the Colts have offered him the offensive line coaching position several times in the past, and he has denied that position and denied that offer a few times. And now, obviously, this past season, he's been brought on as a paid consultant for the team. So he has worked with the team in a consultant role, and now he's being brought on as the head coach. So I agree. I do not believe that he'll be the head coach for the Colts long term. A lot of the criticism around this hire is that he does not have a lot of coaching experience, and there are guys on the staff who do have head coaching experience. Of course, you know, Pat McAfee, one of the most famous and popular Colts players outside of Peyton Manning, as of the recent, you know, two decades here, it seems, has said on the show that he hosts, the Pat McAfee show, that those guys were there at the beginning of the season when the Colts sucked. And, you know, they were also coaching and not doing a very good job, obviously, because the Colts weren't doing so great. So it makes sense, I think, to bring in someone else. And it seems like Jeff Saturday has galvanized this locker room, similar to what Carnell Williams has done at Auburn, which we might get into later into the show. Provided some energy, provided a spark. He loves that organization. He's a Colts player. So I think this is just a way for the Colts to finish out the season with somebody that all the players can root for and get behind, but probably not going to be the long-term answer for Indianapolis, in my opinion. Minnesota, on the other hand, seems like they have found themselves quite the head coach in Kevin O'Connell. Minnesota took the Buffalo Bills to overtime and handed the Bills one of their, I think, what is this, their third loss of the season? Yep, their third loss of the season. And I saw an interesting statistic here, and I haven't 100% verified it, but I think it's true. I do not believe Josh Allen has won an overtime game since 2019. In fact, in 2019, they lost in overtime to the Bill O'Brien headed coach, you know, Houston Texans team. So, I don't know. It's interesting to see one of the best, if not the best, quarterbacks in the NFL on one of the best teams in the NFL just can't seem to win in overtime.
Yeah. Since he's been in the NFL, you know, he hasn't won a single overtime game, obviously. A couple of those against Patrick Mahomes. Then this year, you know, he had the Vikings. He do have the game against the Texans a few years ago. I don't know what it is. He just can't seem to win these games, and a lot of it does come down to I don't think he's ever been the first one with the ball in overtime. And, you know, a lot of people have called for changing of the overtime rules. I would like to see some adjustment to how it is done. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, but we'll see. But another thing with Josh Allen, you know, he got hurt last week. He hurt his elbow. We still don't know to what extent the injury is. He did play through it. He had a pretty decent game, 29 of 43, 330 yards, one touchdown, but he did have two interceptions, and he now leads the NFL in interceptions. He has 10 interceptions on the year. He's leading the NFL. And, you know, beginning of the season, a bunch of people were looking at this guy as an MVP candidate. I think he's still up on the leaderboard of who will be a finalist for the MVP. But I don't know if you can justify it with how many interceptions, and especially if they keep losing. You know, now they're 6-3. They are no longer in the lead in the division. Now the Dolphins are in the lead. So they got to figure something out. I don't think anybody expected them to lose to the Vikings this week, even though the Vikings do only have the one loss. I think everybody kind of expected the Bills to show everybody they're still one of the best teams in the NFL. And they actually had a pretty decent lead in this game, and then they gave it up. I think Josh Allen also had a fumble late in the game. Yeah, so he had a one fumble loss late in the game that did allow them to send it in overtime and then the Vikings to win it. So I don't know what's going on. Hopefully the Bills can figure that out soon if they do intend to make a Super Bowl run.
Yeah, kind of feels like if you're going to be a Super Bowl contender, a perennial Super Bowl contender, which the Buffalo Bills are looking to become, you need to be able to win these games in overtime. And it was a 17-point deficit that the Minnesota Vikings were able to come back from and win this game 33-30. And those interceptions that he threw, they were not close interceptions. They were ugly interceptions. So, you know, you can't really, I think, put that blame on the elbow. It's between the ears there. You got to clean those things up. Bills, obviously a fantastic team, still one of the top best teams in the NFL. But I think the Minnesota Vikings, even though they've sort of scraped by some of these wins that they've had, they're 8-1. So they will be in the conversation for the NFC Championship game. I have a good feeling about them moving forward. And like you mentioned, the Miami Dolphins, they continue to win. Tua Tagovailoa has remained undefeated whenever he has started at the quarterback position. Of course, the Dolphins have three losses. All three of those losses came while Tua was away under the concussion protocol. They beat up on the Browns 39-17. It was an ugly loss for the Browns. Jeff Wilson Jr., who has come over from San Francisco at the trade deadline, very familiar with this San Francisco run scheme that Mike McDaniels is operating, and he has had some really good games as of late. 17 carries for 119 yards and a touchdown. Raheem Mostert, also from San Francisco, with 8 carries and 65 yards and a touchdown as well. Tua, 25 of 32 for 285 yards and 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Now, I want to check here. I believe this is his third game in a row with 3-plus touchdowns. Let's see.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
three games in a row, 3-plus touchdowns, and no interceptions in any of those games.
Yeah, so we talk about the MVP race. Obviously, Tua missed 3 games. Is Tua, you know, if he continues to play like this, is he kind of putting himself in that MVP conversation?
I think he definitely is. He has moved up on the actual MVP, you know, betting odds, if you pay attention to that. But, you know, 3 straight games with 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. I know it's the first time in Dolphins history that that has happened. And then the last 2 games before this, he had actually had over 300 passing yards as well in those games. This one just missed out of it at 285. Mm-hmm. And I know a bunch of people before the season didn't really expect this kind of performance, even with the addition of Tyreek Hill. A bunch of people had kind of given up on Tua as a quarterback in the NFL. But it kind of shows you, you know, you get the right players, you get the right coach in there who believes in the quarterback and schemes around what he does well, you can have a very successful, you know, year. And you can almost make the argument that because of the games he's missed, it actually improves his MVP, you know, standing. Not as in for stats, even though he's still putting up an absurd amount of stats, and I think he leads the NFL in a lot of percentage stats anyway.
QBR.
QBR, I think he's the longest yards per attempt. He leads the NFL or is in the top five in a lot of categories. And then you look at it in the games that he has. There has been one game where they lost that he technically started, but he did go out because he got hurt in that game. But, you know, every game he started and finished, they've won. And the games he's been out, they've lost. If that's not a most valuable player, I don't know what is.
And I think it's important to note, that was that Bengals loss that they took there, but it's important to note that the guy that they have behind Tua, Teddy Bridgewater, you know, he has been a guy who has started, you know, last year he was a starter at the Broncos, and the year before that he was a starter at the Panthers, and, you know, there's several people who thought he might end up being the starter. There was some noise in the preseason about him being the starter with some of the things that he said and the way that he worded interviews. Clearly, though, Tua is the best quarterback in that locker room, and it's not even close. The question then becomes, like a lot of these young, talented quarterbacks who are having a lot of success, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Lamar Jackson, are you going to pay Tua high-caliber, high-level starting quarterback money? This has been, you know, sort of a one-off season in terms of the kind of year that he's had, because when you look at his history, at least in the NFL, obviously Alabama, he was fantastic, but in the NFL, under Brian Flores, he didn't have these kind of numbers and did not have these kind of performances.
You know, I think a lot of this season has to do with him. I think right now this year is, and he's still been hurt. You know, he's gotten hurt in a couple of games, but I think this is the most healthy he's been since he's been in the NFL. Obviously, when he first got to the NFL, he was still coming off that injury he suffered in college, and then I still don't think he was really over it last year. And when the coaches, you don't know whenever you're going to get pulled. Like, you throw one interception, you might get pulled. That's how Brian Flores was kind of operating down there. And, you know, you hear all of the turmoil that was in the locker room. It seemed to me that nobody on the coaching staff really had a lot of confidence in him. You finally got the new coach. You got some different players in. And, you know, a lot of the stats that he didn't put up in the past, you know, if you're watching the tape, you're seeing a lot of drop pass. Obviously, there were some bad, you know, throws, but there was a lot of drop passes deep down the field. Now, with Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, who was there last year, you know, they're holding on to the ball, but it's not just them. If you look at this past game, there was
their tight end, Mike Gesicki.
There's nine different receivers, and you had, you know, Waddle only had four catches. Hill only had five catches. So he's distributing the ball better than he's done at any point in the NFL. Now, to speak about getting big-time quarterback money, I don't think you can justify it yet with it just being the 1 year, but I think more importantly because he has still been getting hurt, and I don't think you want to put a lot of money with somebody who you don't know is going to be healthy because it could be one more hit and he might never play football again. I hope it doesn't happen, but that's things that you're going to have to think about business-wise that I don't think Miami would be willing to put themselves out there right now. But it'll be interesting to see, especially if he, you know, if they make the playoffs, if he somehow wins the MVP. I think right now, at least, you know, in this room, we think that it's going to be between Tua, Jalen Hurts, and possibly Allen or Mahomes. And, you know, Tua's making a very strong case for himself. So hopefully he can keep this going and then potentially get some money in the future.
Yes. Love to see these former Alabama players having tons of success in the NFL. We continue to wish Tua and Jalen and Mac Jones and all the other Alabama players in the NFL, we have spent 2 hours sitting here naming them all off, continued success. Be sure to stick with us as we are shifting our focus to college football when we return.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
All right, and welcome back to the student section. Talking a little NFL football, the Detroit Lions got their first road win of the season, and I believe of the Dan Campbell tenure, going up against the Chicago Bears, 31-30. Obviously, Justin Fields really hot right now. Everyone talking about him. and the things that he is doing. They've built this new offense around him and his skill set. Head coach Matt Eberflus there, a defensive-minded guy, but he's brought in a great offensive coordinator. And Justin Fields didn't exactly put on the kind of performance we were all expecting him to see. He only threw 12 passes for 167 yards and two TDs with one pick. Now, he did carry the ball 13 times for over 140 yards and two touchdowns on the ground. So he accounted for four touchdowns. But it feels like they need to start incorporating this passing game a little more if they want to have the kind of success that they're looking to have. Fun fact about Matt Eberflus, the current head coach of the Chicago Bears. He is a former player for Nick Saban while Nick Saban was at Toledo. So the Nick Saban coaching tree continues to expand.
Yeah, one thing about that game before we move on. You know, he had the one interception. That one interception was returned for a touchdown. The Lions outscored the Bears 21-6 in the fourth quarter. And, you know, Justin Fields wasn't all bad. He did have a 67-yard touchdown run to put them up 30-24, but then they missed the extra point. So if anybody ever wonders why a coach might go for two to make it a instead of a 5-point lead to a 6-point lead, that's why, because you never know if they're going to miss the extra point.
Yep. Kickers, how unreliable are they, right? Very fortunate that Alabama has a great kicker in Will Reichard. Seems to be getting his groove back after a few unfortunate misses a couple of weeks ago. So, all right, last game we're going to hit on in the NFL, the San Francisco 49ers welcome the Chargers in San Francisco. Chargers lost 22-16. You know, I have in my notes here, Kyle Shanahan. It seems like the offense isn't operating at the level that I expect it to operate at when you consider the fact that they have an excellent offensive line. They have Christian McCaffrey now there at running back. They have George Kittle at tight end. They have Brandon Ayuk and Debo Samuel at wide receiver. Jimmy Garoppolo has operated this offense for years and years. And yet they just don't seem to be getting things going. I don't know if it has to do with the fact that Mike McDaniel, who was the offensive coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers last year, has left and gone to Miami. So I did a little digging, and as it turns out, Miami definitely doing a little bit better than San Francisco in terms of total yards per game, passing yards per game, total yards, total passing yards. The only area where Miami is not doing quite as well as San Francisco is in the rushing category. But it seems like the San Francisco 49ers were hurt by not allowing Jimmy Garoppolo to practice with the team during the offseason and kind of ostracizing him to work practice on his own. They bring him back as a backup quarterback. They have all of these weapons, Elijah Mitchell, Christian McCaffrey, Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, the fullback there, Kyle Juszczyk, all these elite offensive players, and they score, what, 22 points, and they have a 5-4 record, so they're barely over 500?
Yeah, this game, you know, very underwhelming performance by this offense that we kind of expect to be good, and I know, you know, the head coach, he has a great history of with his offenses, but, you know, losing your offensive coordinator from last year is now the head coach at Miami. You can kind of see what they lost there. And they still, you know, they added Christian McCaffrey, and his first game back, they did, you know, extremely well, and I think we kind of expected that to continue on. And then this week, it was almost a dud from their offense. Now, it wasn't all bad. You know, they did come away with the win. Jimmy Garoppolo, 19 of 28, 240 yards, and you know, most people didn't expect him to be on this team, and then, you know, they kept him on. I think he was backup or practice squad. I can't remember exactly where he was at, but then, you know, the starting quarterback goes down, Garoppolo ends up being the starter again. But I found this interesting stat, because we always think about the NFL as being a quarterback-driven league, and if you want to win a Super Bowl, you have to have elite quarterback play. That's how it seems most years right now. And Jimmy Garoppolo, who has been to, you know, one Super Bowl where he lost to Mahomes when they did have a pretty decent lead, there have been 12 games in his career, regular and postseason, where he has not thrown a touchdown pass. And his team is 10-2 in those 12 games. I just think that's very interesting with how quarterback-driven this league is now. It seems that when Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't throw touchdowns, the team does better than when he does throw touchdowns.
Yeah, hey, listen, I'm not getting that deep in the water here, but man, yeah, I don't know. I just feel like this team, when you look at what they have, should be doing better.
Should definitely be doing better than what they are, mm-hmm. but you know, there's, you know, they are 5-4. They are getting kind of lucky with how down that division has been this year, especially with the Broncos and the Chargers, the Chiefs. Oh, I misspoke right there. They are in the NFC West. But with how down the NFC West has been.
The Rams.
With the Rams, the Seahawks. You know, the Seahawks might win that division this year. The Cardinals being down, they're doing very well. The Chargers in the AFC West, they are, will still be alive in things with how down their division has been as well. Yeah. Chiefs will probably win that one. So,
well, here's something else that I've, you know, obviously Sean Payton leaves and retires from the New Orleans Saints, right? He's currently an analyst at Fox. And I encourage anybody who follows football to research his interviews that he does weekly with Colin Cowherd on The Herd. They're very insightful because the man is a genius when it comes to coaching football. Obviously, Super Bowl head coach, future Hall of Famer. And he's been pretty public about the fact that he will end up being a head coach as early as next season back in the NFL. And I wanted to float this out there. The Chargers, you know, obviously they're under Brandon Staley here. They have not made the playoffs the past two seasons with Justin Herbert as their quarterback. This season, they have not scored 35 points in a single game. The closest they got, they scored 34 against the one-win Houston Texans. They scored 10 against the Chargers. 19, they scored, you know, 24. 24, 10. It's just they've not had a great dominant performance here. I mean, even against the Broncos, they scored 19 points, right? And that was good enough for a win because the Broncos' offense is not great. But it just feels like when you have a guy like Justin Herbert, young, talented quarterback, and you got Austin Eckler, one of the better dual threat running backs. Keenan Allen's been hurt, but he has kind of been back. You have Mike Williams, who is a excellent 50-50 wide receiver. I kind of expect more from this offense as well. So should the Chargers consider pursuing Sean Payton in the offseason?
It definitely couldn't hurt to get somebody else in there who had, you know, very good offenses when he was with the Saints, you know, with Drew Brees, Michael Thomas, and all them. I don't know if they'll be able to. It kind of depends on Sean Payton, right? Is he holding out for one specific job that some people think that is what he expected to get already? Or is he just wanting to go ahead and get back into football? If he just wants to get back into football, the Chargers, that is a great team to go to with the talent that they have and the ability that they have, because there should be no reason that the Chargers should not be scoring, you know, at least 20 points a game with the players that you just mentioned. So if Sean Payton wants to come back, I think you at least have to call him and make him say no. If he wants another job, he can go take it. But if you want to be a successful, you know, team, how about you go get one of the most successful recent coaches who currently doesn't have a job?
Yeah. And, you know, he's working for Fox Sports. They're located out there in L.A., and it seems like he's enjoying his time in L.A., but let's see. How about them Cowboys? If they let go of Mike McCarthy, we could see Sean Payton jump ship to Dallas. All right, we're going to move into the college football segment here. Alabama beat Ole Miss on the final play. Their defensive stand, obviously, I mean, if you're counting the kneels, then I guess that counts as a final play, but you know, Brian Branch deflects the pass in the end zone. Alabama wins 30-24. want to talk about expectations for offense not being met, I think you have to include Alabama in that situation here. The offense has not been good since Tennessee. You know, they scored, what was it, 30 against Mississippi State?
Yep. Then obviously you had the bye week. You had, you know, LSU right after that, yep, where, you know, they still, you know, scored
31,
including mm-hmm. the overtime. But for how good this offense was, you know, in previous years and how it looked like it was at the start of the year, it seems like they just keep regressing as the season goes on. And what percentage of that is, you know, Bryce's injury, because I still don't think he's 100% back, but he is still the one that is making these plays. I know in this past game we did have a lot of success on the ground with Jace McClellan, Roydell Williams, Jahmyr Gibbs was, they said he twisted his ankle, so he wasn't as much of a factor in this game. But how much of this is Bryce carrying this offense while being hurt, and how much is it inept play calling? And I believe most Alabama fans have already decided that it is Bill O'Brien, and some of us, including some notable media figures, do think that there will be huge changes in the Alabama coaching staff in the offseason. It'll be interesting to see how they go forward from here, because there are a lot of people who, you know, I think could do a better job with the talent that Alabama does have on this offense.
Yeah. You know, I've said in previous episodes here on this show, but I've never been a person to call for the coaches to get fired. I do not believe Bill O'Brien will return as the offensive coordinator this offseason, partly because Bill O'Brien's in a lot of conversations to be a head coach elsewhere. So you could probably see him end up being a head coach. He has experience at Penn State, and Nebraska is open. Wisconsin is open, so he could end up back in the Big Ten.
You know, he could go to Big Ten. He could go back to the NFL. There are going to be some job openings there. There have already been a couple of openings, like the Colts that you mentioned earlier. There's also the Panthers, potentially the Chargers. So they want an offensive-minded coach. I don't think, with his performance lately, how likely that is. But, you know, there's going to be even jobs in the SEC if he wanted to stay in the SEC. Yeah. There's obviously the opening at Auburn, which he hasn't really been mentioned for. It's mostly been Hugh Freeze, Lane Kiffin, the, you know, random Deion Sanders name thrown out there, which I did actually hear something today where they were talking about, if Lane goes to Auburn, does Ole Miss then call Deion, because Deion's already in Mississippi? I don't think he goes to Ole Miss, but that's just me. But, yeah, Bill O'Brien, I do think he's going to get another job. I don't think he's going to be fired. Where it is, we'll see. There are a number of opportunities that will be open for him. Then it'll just be up to, you know, Nick Saban and how he thinks this offense should be in the future, because there are, you know, a couple of good people that have not panned out as head coaches that could potentially come back to Alabama to, you know, his coach rehab program, which mm-hmm. has been more successful than it has not. So.
Right. Yeah. Ideally, you would see Texas fire Steve Sarkisian, and then he'd just come back and be our offensive coordinator for a third season. But obviously, we don't wish anyone to get fired. I do not believe Bill O'Brien will be the offensive coordinator. And, you know, I honestly think it's probably going to be the end of the line for Pete Golding, too.
Yeah, I think he's done as well. He might stay with the program. He might stay as, you know, a recruiter. If Nick Saban still wants to keep him on staff, he has been very successful at recruiting. As a defensive coordinator, I spoke about this yesterday. It seems that since he took over as the defense coordinator in 2018, the defense has regressed almost every year, if not every year. And I did like what I saw from the defense this past week, minus like the first quarter and a half. Mm-hmm. You know, once we were down 17-7, we did, you know, we didn't stop Ole Miss's offense. They still got yards. They obviously had the drive where they almost scored that could have gave them a chance to win the game. But the defense, you know, they showed a lot of fight when they could have just rolled over with most of what they've wanted the season seemingly out of reach. Obviously, no SEC championship game. Probably not going to make the playoff unless they get a lot of help. So I liked how the defense fought. And then we wouldn't have given up a single point in the second half if it wasn't really for one huge face mask penalty from Dallas Turner, because that was the only possession that they scored a touchdown on, where it was 3rd and 16, and we gave them a first down. So I liked the fight from the defense, but I think overall, if you look at the whole body of work, I don't think he will be the defense coordinator next season.
Yeah. We're going to continue talking about the Alabama Crimson Tide when we return here on the student section.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
All right, welcome back to the student section. We were talking the Alabama Crimson Tide, trying to figure out what's going to happen with its coaching staff. I think we've both come to conclusion that both coordinators will likely be gone at the end of this season. I am of the opinion that despite the fact that statistically speaking, Pete Golding has been a pretty darn good defensive coordinator, the narrative around Pete Golding, even from Alabama fans over the past several years, fire Pete Golding, fire Pete Golding, Pete Golding's not very good. I think the narrative is actually hurting some recruiting for us, perhaps. And the narrative around the Alabama defense has been that we are not what we used to be. We're not a dominant defense anymore. So, if anything, I think Nick Saban should consider moving on from Pete Golding just to change the narrative and hopefully brighten that narrative up a little bit. Now, obviously, Nick Saban would be the first to say, hey, we don't listen to the media, we don't listen to outside noise, and I get that. But high school players do.
Definitely.
I find it hard to believe that a five-star recruit in, you know, Pasadena, California, is not on social media, right? Alabama players in the building sometimes will let some of those things slip in the cracks there.
Yeah, I mean, if you're thinking about, you know, players today, and, you know, especially today because of how big sports media has gotten, you know, Alabama's not recruiting Alabama anymore. I mean, we do recruit, you know, very good players out of the state of Alabama, but we're recruiting nationally because we're trying to bring in the best players possible. And if Alabama's recruiting those players, everybody else is recruiting those players. Georgia's recruiting those players. And when you have a defense like Georgia and how they performed, and then you have a defense like Alabama, Alabama still puts players in the NFL. But right now, I don't think anybody would say that Alabama's defense is as good as Georgia's. So if you have those two options, here listening to the narratives of these defenses, I think you're going to lean more to a Georgia. And, you know, I do like that point that maybe move on just to kind of, you know, show them that we are trying to evolve with our defense and get back to the standard that our defense should be held to.
Yeah, and it was interesting here off the air, we were talking about some potential candidates that might end up filling those roles if these offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator guys were to leave. And I think we both decided that maybe one of the co-defensive coordinators at Georgia, whether it be Will Muschamp or I forget who the other one is. Let's see. You know, obviously Will Muschamp has a lot of experience with Nick Saban.
Yeah, you know, he was with him at LSU. He then also, you know, he was defense coordinator at Auburn for a while. He tried out the head coaching, you know, stuff with South Carolina. You know, he didn't really work out as a head coach. And then, you know, now he's back as a defense coordinator at Georgia, and Georgia has one of the best defenses in the nation, if not the best. I think they are the best right now, even if it is not, you know, statistically in all categories, but they're up there in every single one. So I think he would be a good guy to at least give a call to.
Yeah. Will Muschamp and Glenn Schumann. Glenn Schumann, who's the inside linebackers coach there, a former Alabama grad assistant who worked under Kirby Smart for the longest time here at Bama. So he's got some Alabama and Nick Saban connections. So both of those guys could be, you know, potential candidates. And of course, you have Jeremy Pruitt out there. But hey, that comes with its own luggage as well.
You know, I think we could talk all day about who we would want as a defense coordinator, because there is a long list of people that have ties to the university, to Coach Saban, or just very good coaches in general. But we got other stuff to talk about.
Yes, obviously the offensive coordinator. the, you know, when it comes to offense, it's kind of a little bit more cloudy, I would say, you know, because you're not really sure. There's not an obvious candidate. Oh, that guy should come and be our offensive coordinator, because there's not been, you know, I guess there's only been one NFL head coach that's been fired right now. So that's the only guy that you're looking at. If you're taking about, you know, thinking about trends, Nick Saban going to the NFL, and that's been Matt Rhule. Yeah. And I don't know if Matt Rhule would be interested in coming and being a coordinator. He is getting paid like $40 million to sit on his couch, and he'd probably be up for a head coaching job somewhere.
Yeah, he might want to wait it out. He might want to wait it out, see if he can get head coaching offers. If not this year, maybe in a year or two, and, you know, he's still going to be making his money from Carolina. Right now, the people that I think everybody would want as an offensive coordinator are currently employed, so you will have to coax them out of their positions. You could go with, you know, how Nick Saban has been going, you know, recently. I know there's been a couple that don't hold true to this, but a lot of the recent offensive coordinators were coaches that were fired from previous jobs, and there are a couple of them that seem to be good offensive minds, but to get the public to kind of wrap their head around the potential hiring of some of these coaches that just didn't work out, it might be hard to get them on board. But I trust Nick Saban. I know Bill O'Brien hasn't worked out as well, but, you know, we still we haven't been terrible. You know, Bryce Young still won the Heisman last year. I have confidence in Nick Saban choosing the right offense.
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen's out there.
Dan Mullen's good. I've heard some people talk about Scott Frost. I don't know about that one, but
no, Scott Frost, I think he runs too weird of an offense. He runs a very college-y offense. He doesn't run the offense that we like to run, which is pro style. Now, you do have the current Nebraska offensive coordinator, who was the offensive coordinator last season for Kenny Pickett and Jordan Addison at Pitt, Mark Whipple, who could potentially be there. But a guy I'm looking at really hard is the current TCU offensive coordinator, Garrett Riley, who is Lincoln Riley's younger brother. And if he's like 80% as good at offense as Lincoln Riley, I would love to have him on our coaching staff.
Yeah, it's not a bad pick. I would just ask, I know Alabama's got the big name, we got the pocketbook, we could probably outbid TCU, but if 100%. TCU does go undefeated and makes the playoff, does he leave TCU for anything other than a head coaching job?
Well, it'd be interesting to see if he would get a head coaching job, because last season he was the offensive coordinator at SMU.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's a well-known commodity. Now, there will probably be some smaller schools who would look at him.
Definitely.
But then again, if you work for Nick Saban, that's kind of a stamp of approval that unlocks a lot of other jobs that he may never get if you never work for Nick Saban. So if I were him, I would strongly consider joining.
I would tell any successful coordinator to consider coming to Alabama right now.
Yes. Moving on from Alabama, we talk about TCU here. They are undefeated after they beat Texas 17-10. That's not great. Texas may never be back. I'm just going to be real with you. Texas fans, if you are listening somehow, some way to our, you know, radio show here in Tuscaloosa, they may never be back. I'm not entirely sure why. Steve Sarkisian's recruited really well. They have a lot of talent on that offense. Bijan Robinson, one of the best running backs in the country, if not maybe the best running back in the country, right? And, well, he only had 29 yards. Off of 12 carries, that's less than 3 yards per carry there. So that's pretty terrible. Roschon Johnson is definitely an underrated running back there. Another really good running back. 5 carries, only 14 yards. Also less than 3 yards per carry. So, and well, of course, Quinn Ewers had 5 carries for minus 15 yards, which is terrible.
Yeah, this was a very disappointing performance by the Texas offense, especially being at home. You're favored by 7 points. You only put up 10. Your defense, you know, they held TCU to 17 points, which I don't think anybody else has been able to do this season, and you couldn't score enough. If you hold a team to 17 points, you should win every game. You should have the offense that can get 3 touchdowns. They didn't do it. They lost 17-10. Quinn Ewers passing 17 of 39, 1 interception. I don't know what to think about this, because the way Quinn Ewers played against Alabama. Obviously, he got hurt in the game. He was like 9 of 12, already had 140 yards.
Yeah.
And everybody was already crowning him as like the next great college quarterback. And obviously, he got hurt. But, you know, he came back from the injury. He's played good in some games, and then other games, seems like the bigger games, he's kind of, you know, shrunk away.
Mm-hmm.
And this game with a top four team coming into your stadium, this was your chance to show that your program was on its way to finally being back. Not as in, oh, we won, now we're back, but show everybody that you're on your way there. And, you know, in a year or two, you'll be back to being in the top 10 consistently. And I don't know what it is. They just can't seem to get it together. And, you know, I think since Steve Sarkisian has been there, their home record is only 8-4, which isn't, you know, terrible. It's a winning record. But if you want to be an elite program, you need to have home field advantage that you can count on. And when you're only putting up 10 points at home, it's not going to work out.
Yeah, Steve Sarkisian, Alabama fans know how great he is at offense, and 10 points in an entire quarter when you have the talent of Quinn Ewers and the talent of Bijan Robinson and the talent of Xavier Worthy, it's pretty disappointing to think of. So TCU Horned Frogs remain undefeated. They are 10-0 right now, looking to potentially become an undefeated Pac-12 championship contender. So if that were to happen, if they were to go undefeated and win the Pac-12, TCU would 100% make it to the college football playoff in Sonny Dykes' first year as their head coach. LSU clinched the West when they took down Arkansas 13-10. It was not a great day for Arkansas. Had they had their starting quarterback there in KJ Jefferson, I honestly believe this game would have gone the other way. Arkansas taking down LSU and put Alabama ahead right now in the SEC West. Unfortunately, KJ Jefferson did not play, still injured. And the LSU defense continues to be pretty impressive, especially their true freshman there, Harold Perkins, at linebacker.
Yeah, he played extremely well in this game. You know, he had a few sacks, but he was, even the plays that he didn't make, he was still causing all sorts of chaos for the Arkansas offense. And I'm with you. I think if KJ Jefferson does play, I think Arkansas wins the game. I was hoping that Arkansas was going to win the game Saturday morning. I predicted Arkansas to win the game, and then about 10 minutes later, I found out KJ Jefferson would not be playing. Now LSU will be going to Atlanta, but if they play like they did this past Saturday against Georgia, it's not going to be close. No. I still think they have a chance to win. Everybody has a chance to win, but they have to improve. Obviously, now they know they're going to be in Atlanta. I want to see what this team does going forward. Are they going to be the team that improves every week up to the game against Georgia,
mm-hmm.
or do we see a letdown when they go to College Station? Well, like this week they play UAB, who is no slouch. We know.
We
see them, you know, being in Alabama. They aren't as good of a UAB team that they have been the last couple of years, but you can't sleep on them. And then you go to College Station in the last game of the year. Obviously, Texas A&M has not looked very good. Just lost to Auburn with, you know, their interim coach and Cadillac Williams. It'll be interesting to see, because this – if they, obviously they're in the SEC championship game, but if they want to keep those playoff hopes alive, they need to show a lot more than what they did this past season.
Yeah, and it's already going to be tough because they are a two-loss team, and no two-loss team has ever made it to the college football playoffs.
They have not, but there's only been one two-loss team in the BCS and playoff era to win a national championship, and that was LSU in 2007. So if they did make the playoff, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
I hope they don't, because not a huge LSU fan, but
obviously,
you know, it would be kind of interesting for them to be the only two loss to win a national championship and then to make the playoff.
Yeah, yeah. I think they're going to get absolutely shellacked by Georgia in the SEC championship game, but that's just me. When you play Georgia, you have to have an elite passing attack.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you are not going to win.
Yeah. Does this LSU team think they've already won everything by beating Alabama a couple weeks ago?
No, perhaps.
With the way that they played against Arkansas, it seems like.
Yeah, that's, you know, they get up for one game and then you don't get the consistent play. So Georgia will face them in the Atlanta. Georgia clinched the SEC East when they beat Mississippi State 45-19. That was terrible. Mike Leach, the best guy to listen to if you want some post-game press conference entertainment. Vanderbilt beat Kentucky 24-21. That's right, Vanderbilt beat Kentucky. They end a 26-game losing streak against SEC opponents. I like what Clark Lee is doing there. I don't know if he's ever going to get Vanderbilt to where they were under James Franklin, but it seems like he's doing a lot better there than some of the previous head coaches that they've had. Kentucky is not very good this year. Kind of expected them to be decent. They're not very good this year. Will Levis, I know a lot of people are projecting him to be a top 10 quarterback draft pick, maybe even the first quarterback taken in the NFL draft. Will Levis did not look good at all in this game, completing only 11 passes for 109 yards and one interception, no touchdowns.
Yeah, and with Vanderbilt, back to Vanderbilt for a little bit, you know, he might get this program to just good enough. If he can get back to bowl eligibility, which I don't know if it'll happen this year, has two games. One looks winnable, the other one not so much, but anything can happen in college football. They have Florida this week, an 11 a.m. kickoff in Nashville. They can win that one with the way Florida's played some of these games. But then their last game of the season is Tennessee. I don't think anybody will be picking Vanderbilt to win that game. Anything can happen in college football. I don't think it'll happen, but if they can beat Florida, they'll be one win away from bowl eligibility. Mm-hmm. Now, if he, I don't know if it'll happen this year, but like in future years, if he can get Vanderbilt to be around, you know, bowl eligibility every year, 5 to 6 wins, you know, he might be able to use this kind of how James Franklin did, where he uses Vanderbilt as a stepping stone into another job. And as for Kentucky, I don't know what's happened. I guess they've all just decided that it's basketball season now and we don't need to worry about the rest of this, you know, crazy football stuff. But very disappointing. I think at the beginning of the year, I think we all kind of expected them to be the second team in the SEC East. Obviously, Tennessee kind of came out of nowhere. Florida was down too. But, you know, Kentucky started off the season strong and then everything just kind of fell apart, especially getting blown out by Tennessee and now, you know, the loss to Vanderbilt.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to follow Clark Lee there. I think, you know, Clark Lee is a Vanderbilt alum there. So it may be one of those situations where he's at his alma mater. He decides to stick around and continue to invest. It seems like Vanderbilt, I think they're building new facilities and looking at building a new stadium. They brought in a 5-star quarterback who was a freshman there, so they're doing some good things at Vandy.
Yeah, that might be what they need right now. Like, if he really wants to stay there, and, you know, when you're at your alma mater, you know, that's so for some people, that's all they want. And mm-hmm. if he wants that, that can put a sense of stability in Vanderbilt that they haven't had, because most coaches either come there to move on or they don't work out and they get fired.
Right.
So if he can keep them going like this, maybe players start seeing the stability and then come in. Maybe you have a semi, you know, at least a respectable you know, Vanderbilt program.
If you're the head coach of Vanderbilt, you are recruiting players who are considering places like Notre Dame. You are recruiting players away from places like Stanford. You have to go up against those guys because, first off, if you are a player who wants to go to Vanderbilt, the expectation in terms of the academic rigor is incredibly high, a lot higher than some other places. So you're going to have to go up and compete against Notre Dame. You're going to have to go up and compete against Stanford. Now, Clark Lee was the Notre Dame defensive coordinator 2 years ago, so hey, he knows how to get that done. Let's see, Oregon, they fell to Washington in Oregon, 37-34. I'm not sure what the heck is going on there. I thought Oregon was a phenomenal team and probably was going to end up going, you know, running the table here and winning the Pac-12 championship. And UCLA fell to Arizona 34-28 at the Rose Bowl. The Pac-12 just cannibalizes each other. They keep shooting themselves in the foot. They're, you know, those both of those teams had one loss and look like they might be able to get into the playoffs. And they lose to Washington and Arizona. So the Pac-12 is down to one team that could make the playoffs here with USC.
Yeah, it's very difficult with the two loss Pac-12 team because the committee's kind of already showed you what they think of the Pac-12 by having them so low to begin with, Oregon being the highest ranked team until this loss. I was watching the game. I thought Oregon was going to win the game the whole time. And then Bo Nix got hurt. Not for long. He was only out for one series, but that one series is what cost them the game. They were not able to get a first down. The coach decided we've been able to run all over them. They had two running backs with over 100 yards rushing. Bo Nix also had 59 yards rushing. They decided they were going to go for it on a 4th-and-1 in their own territory. They don't make it. Washington kicks the field goal. Bo Nix was not able to have his Heisman moment and lead them down the field to score. UCLA, I hadn't really been high on UCLA all year, but another team where everything was laid out ahead of them. Oregon had just lost. You have your chance. Be that one loss champion. You lose to Arizona, who is not very good. Yeah. So now with the Pac-12, the best-case scenario is for USC to win the Pac-12 with one loss. They still have Notre Dame, who is playing a lot better than what they were earlier in the year.
Yeah.
So it's not a gimme that they will be a one-loss Pac-12 champion, but if the Pac-12 wants to get back in the playoff for the first time since 2016, they need USC to win out.
Yeah, yeah. Not great for the Pac-12 here. I'm just going to take a couple seconds to say some things about Texas A&M. Obviously, we love to poo-poo on Texas A&M whenever we get the shot. They lost to Auburn, which means A&M is no longer bowl eligible, so that's very exciting for Alabama fans. Jimbo Fisher and the Texas A&M Aggies become the first team ever to have a number one ranked national recruiting class and follow it up with a losing season. So, Jimbo Fisher out there breaking records. Good job. All right, quick rundown of the AP poll before we sign off here. Number one, Georgia, obviously. Number two, Ohio State. Number three, Michigan. Number four, TCU. Round out the top four. You have five, Tennessee. Six, LSU. Seven, USC. So they're sitting right there, kind of outside looking in. If they continue to win out, they might make it in. Number eight, Alabama, up two spots. Number nine, Clemson, up three spots. They are not the ninth team in the country, but hey, it's whatever. Utah at number 10. Penn State at number 11. Oregon falls six spots to 12. North Carolina at 13. They're 9-1. So we could see potentially a one-loss ACC championship winner at North Carolina maybe make the playoffs. I don't know, perhaps.
I don't think it'll happen, but I'm rooting for them.
Yeah. 14, Ole Miss. 15, Washington. 16, UCLA falling seven spots. 17 is UCF. And Gus Malzahn, Auburn. Hey, what the heck did you do there?
Good job.
Yep, fantastic. Notre Dame, 18-19, Kansas State. They put up a fantastic performance against Baylor this past Saturday. 20 is Florida State. 21, Tulane. 22, Cincinnati. 23 is Jeremy Chadwell's Coastal Carolina. He's a guy who may end up with the head coaching job at Auburn. 24, Oklahoma State. And 25, Oregon State. All right, I've been Adam McGuirk, joined by Adam Hambright. Excuse me. Thank you for tuning in to the student section. Be sure to check us out at WBUA90.7.com.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.